For EAA Radio, it's Kevin Whalen speaking with Administrator Jared Isaacman, the administrator for NASA. Jared, welcome. We're very excited to talk with you. Thank you for speaking with us today.
Oh, it's awesome to be here. We're at Oshkosh, and it's one of the best times of year.
Yeah, great place to be. I want to go ahead and get started. The biggest thing that's been on everyone's mind recently is Artemis II. A lot of excitement around that mission. You had a lot of attention. We're now switching towards Artemis III. As we look forward to the Artemis III mission, what sort of challenges has your agency encountered? And what is the timeline looking like for Artemis III?
Yeah, so it's a great question. Well, let's just start. For as awesome as Artemis II was a mission, and man, was it spectacular. I mean, you know, from launch through splashdown, and for outstanding human beings, those astronauts did a stellar job. The problem, though, is we were launching that rocket every 3.5 years. For those that tuned into Artemis I, which was an uncrewed mission around the moon, it was 3.5 years before Artemis II. So it's great that we're getting back in the business of launching big rockets. Artemis III is next up. But what everyone should be looking forward to is this type of thing happening with frequency. I mean, SLS as a rocket, we better be launching that every single year from here forward, whether it's Artemis III, Artemis IV, where we actually return our astronauts to the surface of the moon, Artemis V, until such time as we transition to other, you know, more affordable commercial vehicles, so we can go to our moon base all the time. But for Artemis III, that's coming up in 2027. It's going to be very different than Artemis II. Artemis II showed us the moon again. Artemis III is going to be very much like Apollo 9. So you'll have the Blue Origin New Glenn launch, you'll have the SLS launch and Starship launch. Three of the most powerful rockets in the world launching in quick succession, and we're going to converge the Orion spacecraft with the landers in Earth orbit, test interoperability, gain the confidence, the good data we need to set up for Artemis IV, where NASA astronauts go back to the moon.
Have you run into any challenges so far getting set up for that?
Well, for sure. We're rebuilding muscle memory, you know, and that's disappointing in a lot of ways because, and certainly it is for the NASA workforce. That's why everybody's kind of rallying to the ball right now and getting things going. Because if you look at our history, going back to the first NASA-designed vehicle, which actually leveraged a lot of the Army rocket technology, you know, from Mercury through Gemini, which was a Titan II ICBM, we would launch those vehicles on average every 3.5 months. I mean, if you think about it, it was only about 2 months from when Apollo 10 took the lunar lander into lunar orbit, but obviously did not land. Approximately 2 months later, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin are walking on the moon on Apollo 11. I mean, that's what we used to do. So every 3.5 years, very challenging. Rebuilding that muscle memory as an organization, you know, working with urgency while doing it safely is something we haven't done to this level in quite literally decades. So we're rebuilding that muscle memory at the agency, but everybody is rushing to it. Lots of enthusiasm right now at your space agency.
There certainly is, and I echo that enthusiasm. One thing that really stood out throughout the entire program and all of the attention that I've seen is the team environment at NASA. Everything seems like it's very much all hands on deck, like you mentioned, and just a massive collaborative effort.
There's no doubt. I mean, you are talking about some of the brightest minds across the country work at NASA. And, you know, even from our internship programs, where less than 1% of the applications are ultimately selected, it is a very competitive place to work. And you do so because you want to change the world in air and space. So there is no one at NASA, you know, I'm very fortunate to be able to be there to serve my country alongside this extraordinary talent and deliver on an outstanding mission, but they all knew it. I mean, every one of them is like, it's not safe to launch a big rocket like that every 3.5 years. No one's good at anything you do every 3.5 years. If you play golf every 3.5 years, you're not going to be very good at it. So they all knew this. And that's why being able to come in, clear out some of the obstacles, remove some of the bureaucracy that holds back, you know, the talent that we have at the world's most accomplished space agency and unleashes them in a focused direction, not trying to make everyone happy, not trying to set up programs too big to fail, too costly to succeed, but focused on doing the near impossible. And you're going to have a lot of motivation, a lot of enthusiasm, and some pretty outstanding outcomes.
We're talking with NASA Administrator Jared Isaacman. You talked a little bit earlier about the moon base that we want to build. That is a part of a bigger mission to go from the moon to the Mars, correct?
100%. I'm glad you phrased it that way, because a lot of people are excited that we are going back to the moon and building a moon base, but often wonder, well, what are we going to do there? And there's a lot of reasons. There is certainly immense scientific potential for being on the lunar surface. I have no doubt we'll be putting radio telescopes on rovers and sending them to the far side of the moon. There is so much we can learn from lunar geology. But the primary purpose, for sure, is to interact with the water ice, master the skills, the in-situ resource manufacturing for where we go next, which is Mars. Because we want all of these things to be sorted out when you're 3.5 days away from your home planet Earth than when you're potentially a year away. So we've been gifted a moon that's 3.5, 4 days away. We should make the most of it. There is scientific potential. There may even be economic potential. I'm not ruling out a lunar economy, but we are going there as our technological proving ground for where we go next.
And with that, as we continue to expand beyond that frontier, there's probably some sort of challenges with the propulsion, correct? We need a new sort of propulsion system?
Oh, well, I mean, when we take inventory of where we're at NASA, there are certainly a lot of gaps. I will tell you that chemical propulsion is totally fine going to and from the moon. There's no issue there. We can improve upon it from a cost perspective. The less we throw away of our expensive rockets, the better. So that's what SpaceX and Blue Origin and many other companies, Rocket Lab is working on, Stoke and others, on rapid reusability so we can move mass efficiently to the surface of the moon and do exciting things like on-orbit assembly. But when you start looking beyond the moon, you start thinking about Mars. If you want to send astronauts to Mars and bring them back, and that's key, by the way, we don't do one-way missions at NASA. If we're going to go through the trouble of sending our crews to Mars, they're going to come back and tell us about it. You have two options. One, you can rely on chemical propulsion, in which case you're going to either need an extreme amount of tankers everywhere as refueling stations, and likely have to make your propellant on the surface of Mars, which is hard to do, by the way. It's hard to do on Earth under 1G in one atmosphere. It's going to be hard to do in near vacuum on Mars. Or you leverage nuclear power and propulsion. So you combine nuclear power and propulsion, and you augment it chemically, and then you have a path to put astronauts on the surface of Mars and bring them back with the fewest miracles required. And we are already working in this direction. America will finally get underway on nuclear power and propulsion in 2028 when we launch SR-1 Freedom, the first of what should be many missions as we usher in the nuclear NASA.
Now, changing focus just a little bit, everyone thinks of NASA. The first thought that comes to mind is space and rockets, but that's only part of what the administration does. Aviation is also a big part of NASA. It's the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. How does an aviation background connect with the work that NASA does?
Oh, well, I'll tell you, I certainly have always had a great appreciation for the aeronautics portfolio at NASA. I mean, you're talking going back to X-15, you're talking about SR-71 Blackbird, you're talking about, fly-by-wire development, 3D thrust vectoring engines. I mean, a lot of what wows us at air shows today, when you see the F-22 Raptor, for example, go fly, traces its roots back to NASA. Now, I will say it's fair. It's fair to point out that, aren't you really just known for the whole rocket thing? And yeah, because honestly, we let our X-plane portfolio fade to some extent. We really have one signature X-plane right now. It's cool. It looks cool. It's the X-59. That's our quiet supersonic demonstrator. And we're flying it again with, a little bit more frequency here. But that is not enough. Like, we are rebuilding our X-plane portfolio. We need to be flying higher and faster and blurring the lines between in and outside our atmosphere. True radical designs in propulsion and airframe design. And we got away from that. We got away from that for too long, I'd say the last few decades. But not anymore. It's coming back. So X-59 is just the beginning.
There are new X-planes under development then.
Oh, yeah.
And you mentioned the mission of those X-planes would be to sort of bridge the gap between Earth flight and space flight.
Well, I would say generally our goal, if we're doing it right. So what I don't like, and frankly, it's a true statement for some time now, that the aeronautics portfolio has often been going to subsidize our commercial airline industry on investments they could make. Get a little bit more fuel efficiency out of a proven engine design, fine-tune an engine nacelle to improve efficiency a little bit. NASA can be helpful from a subject matter expertise. We also have some of the finest test facilities across the nation. We can help industry. But that's not necessarily where the taxpayer dollars that fund NASA should be going. Taxpayer dollars going into NASA should be funding the radical stuff that no one in industry would rightfully work on today. So generally, I interpret that as radical airframe and engine designs that can take us higher and faster. Not to say if there weren't massive breakthroughs in efficiency, that's not interesting. It certainly is. But I would love to see us continue to take air breathing designs. Like I said, really start, you know, blurring the lines between in and outside our atmospheric flight. And yes, we have new X planes in development.
That's really exciting to hear. And speaking of planes, too, you're flying in the show in Air Venture, correct?
I am. I couldn't imagine coming to EAA Oshkosh and not flying. So this afternoon, I'll be flying in the F-5, the Freedom 250 jets. We have a four ship that will be going up. So some, you know, fun formation flying around the show. And then we'll fly the MiG-29 this evening, but I'll fly it in the show tomorrow as well.
Awesome. Very nice looking airplanes. I'm sure the air show attendees are excited to see those. One final question for you today. There's a lot that NASA does. I'm sure there are many goals, kind of a tough stuff. You need to take a moment to think about it, or maybe the answer will come to you right off the top of your head. If you could pick one thing that you would wish your NASA legacy to be, what would you like for your legacy to be?
Oh, it's and I'm not going to give you a milestone, like something like landing astronauts on the moon, or building a moon base, because that's honestly, that's timing. You know, if you're fortunate enough to be nominated in the position, and you have a supportive president with a good national space policy, and you have bipartisan support of Congress, and they give you enough money, well, then believe me, the talent that shows up to work at NASA every day can do extraordinary things. For me, it would all be about empowerment. Like if we can focus the resources that taxpayers entrust NASA with, which is a lot, it's $25 billion a year, and you put it towards the true needle-moving objectives, and you unleash the talent that lives inside NASA, then returning to the moon, building a moon base, all pale in comparison to what this agency will be capable of accomplishing in the years ahead.
Administrator Isaacman, thank you very much for talking with us today. I'm Kevin Whalen for EAA Radio.